We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Hello and welcome to the Mind of Magnus. Our show has a simple premise. We're here to share the stories and life adventures of others to help expand our minds. I'm Matt Austin, and here's your host, Magnus.
Hello, hello, folks. Welcome again to another edition of the Mind of Magnus. As always, recording from the High Falls area here in Rochester, New York, where spiritualism happens, where awesome science happens, where weird people exist, and I love being part of it. So today's show is actually the second part of an interview that I had last week with John Michael Godier, who is a sci-fi author. Check his out. He's got three books out, another book along the way. He also has some amazing YouTube channels, one of which has his name, John Michael Godier. Search there. The second one, which is more in-depth, full show sort of design on this one, is Event Horizon. I really can't stress enough that you should be following him and his shows on YouTube. They are mind-blowingly impressive what science he shares, but coming from the eye and the brain of a science fiction author, he has the questions that they're not dry. They are unique. They are very creative, very particularly from a brain that I was very lucky to chat with. So this is the second episode, so check it out. Join in for the fun. If you missed the first one, go back and listen. We're going to jump right back into the second one. This episode has questions that came in from the Patreon folks, as well as some of the listeners and those that I chat with. So I actually had some really great questions that came in. So I want to thank everyone for that. So without further ado, here is the show. So John, I'm really impressed. I love the way your brain works with sci-fi. Now I'm curious on what that means for what we see in the science realm of like today. We have so many like UAP, UFO disclosures, those like close encounters of the third kind sort of idea. From your perspective of talking with so many creative folks or just being a well-read man, are there any sort of those tropes that kind of strike as true? You know, any sort of like the little gray men are accurate because of X, Y, or Z?
Well, my problem with most close encounters of the third kind, as it were, my problem with that is they're always primates. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not convergent evolution. That's, again, we came from a fish with four fins. That's the reason why we look like what we are. The interesting ones, I would say, would be the ones where it's, you know, got six legs, because, you know, most legged life on Earth tends to have six legs because... Yeah. And that's why we build Mars rovers with six wheels. You know, it's a better design. Whereas ours is haphazard. I mean, look at how hard childbirth is for a human versus, you know, a cat or, you know, an octopus, where it's even easier. It just kills them. They die after the sex.
Yeah. Or after they hatch. Yeah.
That's about it. They live for a year and that's it, which is amazing because they become very intelligent within that year, very quickly, faster than I do. But they, you know, that's one of the things I love, animal intelligence.
Same. That's one reason I went into the podcast, Mind of Magnus, intelligence and the structure of the brain, structure of intelligence of all species. I love it. I used to do marine biology way back in the day, and my focus was cephalopods, oddly enough. I like pufferfish was one of the studies just because I got into it. And then it was on cephalopods, cuttlefish and octopus and stuff. And I like watching an animal, like an octopus is great. Like you give a dog something, dog will take it and kind of look at you and go. Octopus, you give it to them, they're like, look at the thing, look at you, look at the thing, look at you again. And like clearly there's they're processing. You can see it. You can watch the cuttlefish, another one too. They're there.
Yeah, so. And I cannot eat them as a result. It's like, that's not right. Don't kill them. Don't eat them. You know, which sometimes limits me in certain restaurants. but I fall in love with them. You know, their intelligence. And it's dolphins, it's octopus, and I've done interviews on Event Horizon on all this, and we'll do many more because there are many animals that I have not yet covered, elephants. Mm-hmm. If I can't interact with an alien, I can interact with a dolphin, mm-hmm. and that will tell me a good deal, you know. And then interacting with an AI, you know, an artificial generalized intelligence, when that arises, which I think it's going to happen within my lifetime, mm-hmm. it's going to be amazing to compare that, the animals and us, because it would be truly be alien. And that's where I look to eventually see an alien mind, is what comes out of a computer. And the signs are not good. You know, they cheat and they lie. They blackmail. There was that one that blackmailed people.
I saw that. My gosh. And it's been crazy what I've been seeing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you give the humans that design it. Like, you know, it's always I worry how much our own, like having us set it up versus having some other intelligence be the basis for this would have been healthier for all involved. But yeah, it's jarring to see. Like what has happened? Like when I start blackmailing, when it starts tricking people. Oh my God! Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's spooky.
Now, do you feel
sorry for being so spooky? But
oh no, please! But I have random eyes behind me. Spooky is fine with me. I love this stuff. I want a good conversation. Here's something, though. Talking about like intelligence, do you feel that, like, I was listening to a podcast a little bit ago, and one of the AI was making saying words, I don't know if it's true or not, something else, but it's talking about as it gets more complex, it will be able to interact with intelligence like it was some sort of field. Like consciousness and intelligence is not a product of the meat machine we're here, but the meat machine has the ability to start tuning into what may be a consciousness or a super consciousness or an intelligence or some sort of like an intelligent field, you know, for lack of a better term, something else. Do you ever feel you've done some shows on this, I believe, on some of this stuff?
Yeah, it's something that I'm curious about, of course. Mm-hmm. But it ultimately becomes metaphysical,
right?
Rather than physical, because you can't seemingly measure that field. Maybe you can, but we just don't know how. Mm-hmm. So I leave that to metaphysics, but I don't have a problem with metaphysics. These are questions, you know, like they're even religious questions, you know, is there a God or something like that? Those are questions that I can't give you an answer for because I can't measure anything, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it isn't meaningful, or it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It might. No.
I mean, it may be as simple, like you could possibly believe that consciousness is like a fundamental aspect of the universe in this setting, right?
Could. Yeah. I actually said that in you know, Supermind, that, you know, one of the tropes in sci-fi is that love is the highest expression of everything. No, I think the highest expression of everything in the universe is consciousness, because the universe is capable of producing it, but we represent the universe observing itself. Mm-hmm. That's very, very heavy and profound if you think about it. We are the universe seeing itself. And we also know from quantum mechanics that, you know, and things like the famous double slit experiment, observation changes things. It affects it. So you're looking at something and that changes it. Now, there are physical reasons for that, but the thing is that consciousness did that, right? So there are hefty things even within, you know, fully consensus science that are pretty weird, you know, in regards to it. But how do you measure it? You know, how do you measure it? So,
and that's really what science is. We need to be able to measure it. So the metaphysical and the science world are always on two separate sides, or two separate tables, I guess, on this side of ones.
And you're limited by your instrument. So imagine sitting in your car and you're looking at the gas gauge, right? Well, that gas gauge doesn't tell you anything about the ocean.
I like that. Never thought of that. That's amazing.
So I have some questions in for some audience members. Do you want to get into questions in that way? Yeah. So I send out, I have a bunch of people, and actually I was at a party last night, so I got some questions. I went to a friend of mine, had a pickle party. It was a pickle theme party, a bunch of awesome people bringing crazy foods and whatever you can think of. And I happened to bring up I'm like, oh, they asked me one of them today. And I was like, oh, I'm actually getting ready for interview with you. And some people knew you, obviously, they had seen your show, listened to your, and so I got some facts from them as well. So I have one of them first came up. I actually wrote down here. Let's see. One was actually this one from Eve. Love your work. Listen for years. Years back, you chatted with Gary Sacco. So there seems to be repeating pattern at, was it Tabby Star KIC 8462852 is the number of it. Is there any update on that? Eve is asking that question.
No update, but Gary has not stopped. Gary is still observing and they're still trying to pin down a pattern.
Those who may not know, can you just do a quick little update of what Eve is talking about?
So what happened was when they found that star, which was from the Kepler Space Telescope survey. And what it was it's called a photometer. It measures the brightness of light. And it stared at the same spot in the sky for over 2 years, right? Well, most of what it saw was planetary transits. It was discovering exoplanets, of which it found thousands. It was a beautiful instrument. It also showed, you know, star flares, you know, solar flares on stars. It showed variable stars. But there was a group of about 10 really weird light curves, and only one of them has been seriously investigated, which was KIC 8462852, or Tabby Star, after Dr. Tabitha Boyajian, the scientist that looked into it. Well, she crowdfunded Telescope Time, and Gary got in there, and he was like, yeah, he's a data analyst, computer scientist, and he's like, I'll help you, you know, volunteer work, and look at the data. And they have worked ever since for years. And there was also an amateur astronomer. He became an amateur astronomer. He was a professional astronomer. Then he became an amateur and built his own observatory in retirement that also took very high quality data. His name was Bruce Gary. And they were trying to see what the star was doing since the Kepler spacecraft, because it's defunct now, ran out of fuel. And they're trying to see if there's periodicity, because that would tell you that there's dust, you know, in orbit.
Yeah.
No periodicity so far. There's no good evidence for that. So, and the evidence that they do have, when you look at the star, you would expect to see warming of the dust, right? Because, you know, things in the sun warm, right? The third law of thermodynamics, right? Mm-hmm. They don't see it. So it's cold, whatever it is. And the star continues to dip, not as much as it was during the Kepler years, which was 2011 to, you know, whatever. It doesn't do it as much now, but it still does dip. It's just, you can't see any period. You know, if it was orbiting the star, you would see a dip, and then it would come back however many days later. It'd be a cycle. They're not seeing that. It's just randomly changing still. Now we do know that it does appear to be dust, because, you know, when you have a star's light, okay, and you're looking through a dust cloud, it will absorb the wavelengths of light that are the size of the dust, but everything bigger than that through. So they did that observation and they said, yeah, this is submicron dust. It's almost like cigarette smoke. Very, very small dust, barely dust. It's more like smoke. But it should still show an infrared signature, and it doesn't. The only news I can report is that they swung James Webb 3 times towards it to do infrared observations, which is its specialty. Mm-hmm. And those results have not been released. And the moment they are, then I'll have Gary back and we'll talk about it.
That's awesome. My God. Well, yeah. Eve, thanks for that. My God. She was very excited. Very impressed by my git. You're like, oh my God, you got this guy? He's awesome. Kudos for that one.
Welcome to Behind the Studio Door, where we dig into the vibrant creative landscape of Rochester, New York. Hi. I'm Molly Darling, and along with my co-host Christian Rivera and our fabulous producer Chris Lindstrom, it's my pleasure to guide you through the dynamic world of our local creative professionals. Each episode offers a unique glimpse into the studios of those who enrich our Rochester community with their artistic vision. Join us as we explore the diversity and talent in Rochester, revealing the compelling narratives and creative journeys that exist just beyond the studio door.
And we now return to the Mind of Magnus, already in progress. We have one here from Lynn. She asks, do we live in a black hole? The reason I ask is a video discussing the observable universe happens to fit within the Schwartz, and she says, spells it wrong, the Schwartz.
Yes.
So is do we live in a black hole?
Well, the weird thing about that is that in a certain sense, all right, so when you look out into the cosmos, you see only the observable cosmos, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason you only see part of it, a bubble, is because the expansion of space in between you eventually gets so great that light can't actually ever reach you because its expansion is cumulatively larger than the speed of light. That means that we are inside of an event horizon by definition, like that of a black hole. Now, some researchers, and I interviewed one and did a video on it, some researchers think that, well, maybe it really is a black hole. And that our universe is effectively a white hole, or it's, you know, the interior of a black hole. And the weird thing about that is that in some ways, mathematically speaking, the Big Bang looks almost like a white hole, like the end of a black hole. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens if, you know, black holes are spawned universes, you know? So we very well might live inside a black hole. That would be mathematically consistent. You know, it's a good theory, but it's also, you know, general relativity does not predict completely this because it breaks down. So it kind of requires that the interior of a black hole is not a singularity. So you're going to get physicists fighting over that one. But at the same time, singularities are weird, you know, and we only know two types. One is the interior of a black hole where everything goes ultra dense, but also the Big Bang was a singularity that exploded. So there are parallels between black holes and the formation of the universe. However, there are parallels between why a planet is round and a star is round. You know, doesn't mean they're the same thing.
Yeah.
It just means that the universe is imposing rules on them, which is gravity, that make them into that. So it is very early in the game. But there are scientists, physicists thinking about it.
Now, what is your take? And actually, this ties into another question. This comes in from Kim. You're asked the question, what do you think gravity is? What's gravity?
No one knows. There is competing hypotheses that... So general relativity, made famous by Einstein, simply views, and I say this very carefully, describes how gravity behaves. Does not say what it is. Mm-hmm. And Isaac Newton actually said this with his original theory of gravitation. He said, I feign no hypothesis as to what it is. This is just how it acts. You know, and if you're gonna, you know, make a cannonball and fire it, it's gonna do this. Mm-hmm. And the same, Einstein's the same. As to what it is requires a quantum theory of gravity. And some people say, well, maybe it's a particle, you know, like an electron, mm-hmm. you know.
The graviton, what are they called? The possible name for
it. Yeah, exactly. The graviton, which is a very bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Because when you look at things like photons and electrons, they behave as waves and particles, dual nature, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure you know. And that the double slit experiment that I mentioned earlier illustrates that. But here's the question. If gravity is a particle... Mm-hmm. Does it adhere to the double slit experiment?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's what they, because we had some people message in. I was having a conversation with one of them, but they're talking about like the concept of gravity. One person discussion at the party last night was talking about, mentioning your name brought up science, which made me very happy at this party. And in there was talking about the idea that gravity may be in multiple universes, it's shared amongst reasons relatively weak in our universe is because it's shared amongst other universes as well. He was very adamant about it. He believes in multiple universes and gravity is the reason why we can showcase it because it's so weak in ours. I mean, like I said, I have no answer, but I'm going to pass along the little note. It's not much a question, but a declaration. My buddy said last night, thinking what he thinks is gravity.
Big problem is that, as you said, gravity is so incredibly weak. Mm-hmm. At a subatomic level, it almost doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Even though it's so important for us, it requires the entire Earth to sit there and hold us to our chairs.
Yeah. So
that's one of the big problems in physics is that as a force, if that is indeed what it is incredibly weak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can pick up this fighting an entire planet going over way. Yeah.
I just watched violate the heck out of gravity with a Roman Coke. It is just so incredibly weak, which makes it hard to understand because you know, how do you study it? Mm-hmm. And things like the accelerators, where how do you detect it? If it's a graviton, how do you detect it? Because it doesn't interact. It's almost as bad as dark matter in that it just doesn't interact, you know, on that level. It just requires an enormous amount of everything else to be visible, even though it really defines our universe. But that's why the physicists have a hard time with it, is because it's hard to study on the level that you need to study it. And we don't even know, you know, maybe it really is what Einstein treated it as, described it as. He didn't say what it was, but maybe it really is a warp in space-time and there is no particle there.
Which makes sense to me. It's when I'm seeing that, I've come to terms thinking that's the thing. We're just like, there's not a thing. We're just watching the distortion of, you know, the space time around it. Just like you said, you don't need to know what's causing it, but the cannonball is doing that trajectory.
Yeah, exactly. And we use it every day with, you know, when we orbit satellites, Starlink or something like that. That's all, you know, gravitational Newtonian physics and accelerate, you know, speed and everything else. And we know that Einstein's right about most stuff. It's mm-hmm. just that there are areas where it breaks down, which is, you know, black holes, the inside the event horizon. It doesn't really predict right. It starts spitting out infinities, which, you know, I mean, that's infinities, right? So we don't know.
So I have a question that spawns from my nephew who just turned 13, and this ties in because he's watched some of your shows. What episode, if you can show Einstein one of your shows at anything in there, what would be the show you would want to show Einstein?
Boy, that's a great question. My youngest nephew is 26, which makes me feel old. Okay, let me think that through for a moment.
You can come back to that one. That's fine. If think about it, it pops in your head. It's okay. I have some other questions, but that one, I'm going to send it to you ahead of time to be like, this is a good question. Like I said, Blake's a great little guy.
Okay, I got it. It would be Is the Universe a Black Hole with Dr. Nikodym Pavlovsky.
Interesting. And why is this?
Because he blew my mind with a completely alternate view of physics that eliminates the problems of singularities. Then suddenly general relativity is preserved. Yet it predicts that we're inside a black hole. It's very interesting work. That would be the one.
That'd be the one? Nice.
It would not be anything from my channel. I'm just a stupid sci-fi author, right? I'm usually reporting on other stuff and citing papers and all that, and anything that I come up with is just my, you know, sci-fi speculation.
I gotta say, some of those, if you're gonna send one of the videos, some of the like the top 10 things you sent are like the, like there's been a few videos of just a barrage of short little like, and there's this, then this, things to think about. That would also, I would love to see you blow the mind of Albert Einstein with a handful of like, these are the science things we just figured out.
No, I think the Pavlovsky interview would blow his mind because
that's amazing.
There's nothing in his physics mm-hmm. there is, he just never hit on it, right? Mm-hmm. But it does solve problems that Einstein was very uncomfortable with, like singularities, mm-hmm. right, and naked singularities and all that stuff, Whereas in this way of thinking is, which I think he's at the University of Portsmouth in England, this thinking eliminates the problems and creates a certain elegance that, and physicists love elegance, you know, when you get a simple answer, it's really nice, right? Instead of a messy blob of an answer. So it satisfies that. And I thought that was a really good one. I mean, there are many others, though.
Well, if you think about it, we're friends now. Send me a like, you know what? This is the answer now. I think this is one. Or if you do another show in the future, you think about it being like, this is the one that I should tell, like what Einstein would do. I'll let Blake know. I'll pass it along to him that way.
The other thing, man, is I view the Event Horizon episodes as documentary, you know, work where I'm trying to document the luminaries of our time.
And you're doing it great. My God, that's what...
In some cases, they're not dead. So I was the last interviewer. And so there's a lot of stuff there. Another one I would say would be Dr. Patricia N. Stratt, who mm-hmm. talked to me while she had cancer, and she's passed away now. But she was the principal scientist on the labeled release experiment on Mars that actually detected bacteria. And it's never been disproven. It's in question, but it came back with a positive detection on two separate spacecraft, Viking 1 and 2. And so it's documentary stuff to get that stuff, you know, forever on the internet while those people are still here, you know. And that's pretty important, I think. And you know,
I fully present. That's the reason I do these shows. This used to be a radio show, and my whole goal was to have to capture an hour of someone's time, and then I would just back it up on the Internet Archive. So a person existed, something that was being kept and backed up. Like the opening sequence I wrote three or four different openings for you, which I still may use. And the one I my favorite thing I said, I was like, you're a multifaceted communicator who bridges fiction, documentary, and interviews to explore deep questions about our future. That was my sentence I thought was, because you, like, listening to you talk to these scientists and people written papers, and you ask the right questions, but then let them give their spin, not just the answer, but why they came to it. And then just they pontificate on their topic. So you are not just getting the idea out. You're getting the person, the thread that they're interested in, and also what they're currently thinking on now. And there's been some shows where like you said two or three things, and I just listened to this person talk for 5 to 10 minutes on their topic, but freely and almost like somewhat a nebulous way, but all, and you pull it back and you rock doing it. It's what I'm super happy to have you on here, because you have brought the voices of science into a easily digestible, but truly a documentary manner. So yeah.
As far as an intro, I would simply recommend saying, well, this was like talking to Dr. Evil from Austin Power. Yeah, exactly. but it, you know what I'm doing, cause you're doing the same thing. And you know, the other thing that's really important is to, when you ask the question to these people, let them give complete answers. You know, a lot of hosts I hear, won't name names, but a lot of radio hosts that are still on the radio will interrupt and interject just because they are the host. I think it's more important that the scientist gives the complete answer so that people can, you know, follow it. And that seems to be a pretty good formula for me. And to, you know, just document it, because I wished, you know, we only have a couple of very, very rudimentary interviews of Einstein, you know, back from the 50s, almost nothing. And what it is, and what it is not in depth. It's just not, you know, it's just some media person that usually would be covering, you know, something else, sports. And so the thing is that I want to circumvent that in our time and get the scientists on record, you know, while I can, because some of these people are Nobel Prize winners, you know, or will be Nobel Prize winners, but also the younger scientists, because, you know, I'm not afraid to talk to a grad student and put them on there, because they are going to be the scientists in a few years. And you know, Event Horizon's been around since 2018. So a lot of that's happened you know, a lot of those grad students and things that I talked to back then are not PhDs. And so I, again, the documentary aspect to it.
Dude, it, kudos for doing it. And like you said, letting people, I try to get it. I have to remind myself to just get out of the way, set it up and let the guest go at it. And because I want to have a good conversation, I want to learn myself, but you have really got that knack down for letting them really hit their stride. It's funny because you can see like a lot of people interviewed, they have that, okay, here's my answer. That's the bullet point answer they need to have for the test. And no, keep going. And then they're like, oh, well, here's this. And actually, you know, think about it. That's why I always tell people the best part of the show is always in like an hour into it. When I used to do radio, he's driving me nuts. We get done with a show, an hour show. We close up. Thanks for coming. We're going to go in the green room and we have a conversation that rivals that hour in the next 20, 30 minutes. Just like, I want to have that on the show. That's why I do my podcast. I want to have the next bit is always the keep going a little bit more and you're hitting the mark. So,
yeah, 1 hour radio show with breaks, which, you know, they're mandatory. You have to.
Yeah.
And it number one, it disrupts the conversation. And number two, it cuts it down to, I mean, sometimes half hour when you're doing an hour.
Yeah.
And the internet is nicer on that. I don't have to do any of that. So
also I like people swearing. I did radio for years. So I used to, some of my shows, I used to ask the simple question, like, what's your favorite swear word? I had a radio guy I was talking to and he was like, what's your favorite swear words? I can actually swear in this show. This is great. Motherfucker. Whatever his swear word was, I forget now. So, but yeah.
FCC, you know.
Said I did broadcast for a while. We had, and my state, the station I worked with for a while, when I first got going, it's one of the stations I worked with, we didn't have a delay, so we actually were live broadcast. There was not even an 8-second delay on it, so if anything bad happened, you were hoping no one heard it and got in trouble for it. Yeah, so anxiety of swearing still bothers me to like go watch something. So but I'm from New York, so I swear constantly. We use the F word as like a comma in our sentences, so pretty solid. So I have another couple questions and I'll get out of your hair. This has been an amazing time. I don't want to keep holding you too long here. So why aren't spaceships coated in rock? Here's the reason. It seems like it's a relatively abundant space dust out there. And if you coat it with rock, wouldn't it protect it from other space debris? Why don't you see spacecrafts should fly around with a shielding of rock or stone on it?
Okay. You could do that. Course. Mm-hmm. And one idea is to make a generational ship out of an asteroid, because your problem, of course, is micrometeoroids, you know, whacking mm-hmm. India, but also radiation if you're living in the thing. However, you could envision ice, because ice is very, very good radiation shielding, and it's a rock in space, you know, mm-hmm. it's frozen solid. So it would also protect you from micrometeoroids. So you build a shield of ice.
So yeah, so it's almost like a fire crew out there just hosing the front of the ship down and building up walls of ice.
Yeah,
I never thought it.
All of ice. And you've got your radiation shielding, you've got your water supply, and you've got, you know, there would be advantages to ice, but you can't drink rock. So you would have to think in a different mode. But there, you could do that for sure. You could shield yourself with rock, and you could use it to, you know, for metals and things like that. So the idea, it does exist. It's out there, but I have to also add in the alternative of ice.
I love that. That is Jesus. I've actually thought about that rock one for been a kid, never thought about spraying down. Cause yeah, in space, water is rock. Yeah. Leave it to the sci-fi author here to get the best idea out of the box. That's pretty amazing. So here's the one that I like. I'll probably leave it off with this one here. Is there a sci-fi trope that you secretly hate? Is there some detail that bugs you in movies that's become so ubiquitous that drives you nuts? But is there a trope that, as a science guy, can't deal with?
Love is the highest expression of everything in the universe. I think consciousness is.
You and me, man. I am so on the same page. That is now my answer to that question too. Thank you for that one. Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Oh man. So let's say this is amazing. I don't keep talking to you forever. If maybe we'll jump back on another in a year or two, I'll give you, I know you're a busy man. So maybe we'll come back on, jump on again. If you would love to chat more with you, I got more questions probably.
I, as long as I'm not traveling, I'm always up for a chat with anybody.
Yeah. Oh my God, this sounds amazing. I'm enjoying this. I love your show. I love everything.
Doing what I'm doing if I didn't like to talk to people.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's me. And I love to have more stuff. So I may pick your brain. Actually, what I may do too is there's been some cool science stuff happen. Maybe I know you and I have such a weird schedule trying to jump around doing stuff. Maybe I'm just going to have like an update from you for what your stuff. I'll have to get a segment to toss on this episode here.
And record something at 3 a.m. because we're both still up.
Actually, would be fine. I am fine with that because it's actually quiet out here. The fireworks are gone. The cops have quieted down. My God. Yeah. So, John Michael Gaudier, you have been an amazing guest. I thank you for being on the show. Like I said, my whole show is the goal is to expand our minds, to have the listeners just learn more and learn stuff from people's their own stories. So, where can everyone find you? Best place to find you online? Where's to follow?
Easiest place for the books, Amazon.
Amazon. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
And for the content, YouTube, just search my last name on both venues as Gaudier. Everything will come up.
Awesome, awesome. This has been an amazing time. Again, his YouTube channels, it kept me company during the pandemic. I have opened my mind. It is actually one of those videos. Apparently, one of my friends uses you to fall asleep at night. So you're the last voice to hear. You're the perfect voice that your father gave you is just helps them.
That helps too, that I can help the sleep crowd.
Yeah.
Talk about humbling, by the way, where you can help people defeat insomnia and you know, with science stuff, and you can, and that's greater than me. That's bigger than I am. And that's not lost on me.
Oh, well, good. They wanted to pass along a note to you that was you. They did say one of the episodes you start talking about something and got them so excited. They had to get up and write down a note so they didn't forget about it. It was one of those things. So, but yeah, wonderful show. My God, thanks for being on here. We will definitely have you back because I have a lot more questions actually that I didn't want to. I figured we go 5 hours. If we're not careful here. So, but thank you so much for being on, and we will catch you again. Matt will send us all on out, and we will catch you guys later. Thanks so much, guys.
Do you have a crazy story, odd factoid, or want to share something you think will help expand the mind of Magnus? Let us know. Call our voicemail, 585-310-2473. Visit mindofmagnus.com or message us on social media at Magnus Apollo.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
I'm Matt Knotts.
And I'm Chris Lindstrom. And we are the co-founders of the Lunchador Podcast Network, your home for amazing and wide-ranging podcasts in Rochester.
With shows like Anomaly Presents, Behind the Glass, the Level Up Coffee Podcast, Punches and Popcorn, Just Can't Not, and of course, Food About Town, we celebrate the people, places, and things that make Rochester a fantastic place to live.
We have more shows joining the network soon and offer remote and in-person recordings and video too. We're excited to bring distinct and diverse voices together on one network.
Follow Lunchador on social media to catch new episodes as soon as they release and stay tuned for exciting news about new shows and how to support them. Lunchador, celebrating Rochester's creativity through the magic of podcasting.